Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco. What's up with you, man? You all set for your trip?
Yeah, everything's good. I am just on, doing last minute packing and checking of things so that there's something that just fell down. Yeah, just getting ready in the middle of a slightly chaotic home, trying to pack for a long holiday to Japan, which will be hugely exciting. This is the fourth time I'm going to that country.
Lovely.
Absolutely adore it. Things are good. How are things with you?
Oh, very good. Yeah, I just about wound up my, teaching for the summer, and then I've also been simultaneously working on this other project, more to do with the history of not just the South Asian community, but or the Indian community specifically, but various immigrant communities in San Francisco. So I've been really like enjoying it, and then weather's been great. You know, hanging out with my family, with the dog. So everything's good, man. All good.
So what should we talk about today, Rohit? Let's pick something up that's kind of... You were talking about, there's this set of tweets that you've spotted which you wanted to talk about. What's going on that?
Yeah. So this is by a gentleman called Saket Gokhale, and he follows us, and we're very grateful to Saket for following us. And I just started following him recently, and it was a heartbreaking series of tweets. And I think we should talk about it, because I think it says something about the BJP government in particular, but maybe about a wider Indian political culture of vendetta also.
Yeah.
So Saket is an activist now. Pardon me, just bad allergies. And, he has this thread of 8 tweets, and he said that what happened is his father, who was in the Indian police service, the day 30 years he worked, he was an honest man, straight as an arrow, and, he's a figure as a figure I've seen. Lots of Indians who, would just do things by the book, even when everyone else around them wasn't. The day before he was due to retire, on orders from Modi allegedly, well, first he was arrested on some completely flimsy case. And what Saket says is that, the idea was to make an example of him. That's the implication, because he's probably someone who may have refused to frame a Muslim or something like that. I don't know. So he was branded as a quote-unquote secular officer. He may not have gone along with, the sort of political tenor of this government. So the day before he was due to retire, they arrested him on what turns out to be a bogus case.
Yes.
And what he said was, before you put me in jail or just give me permission, the last day that I'm retiring, I think he was due to get either, some kind of promotion and maybe a symbolic promotion, but an award. And he wanted to just walk in his uniform. And all of those things were denied. And for 4 years, he was harassed and tortured, by the police at the behest of the BJP government. And now the courts have declared him free. And, Saket was saying that, his father would like tell... he stood by he maintained his innocence. But he said he's also in some ways, a defeated, broken man. They've taken away what mattered most to him. And, his professional identity, the fact that he served, in this capacity... A number of people responded. Omar Abdullah, the former chief minister of Jammu Kashmir, responded with a gracious tweet. And Saket said that, yes, my father was your PSO. That's, I think, your personal security officer. And typical, like, the Rajdeep Sardesai of the world, travesty of justice, very sad. I'm like, where were you all these years, man? You're the media, right? Why weren't you following up on this story? So there's a couple of things I just want to highlight here. One is that this is a very tragic case. And two, that there have been a lot of cases like this, and I think the BJP government is especially vindictive, but, again, they're not the only ones to do this. I know of people who've, been dealt in the same way by the Congress. Jayalalitha has done the same thing. Lalu Prasad, the same thing. Once our politicians get an iota of power, anyone who, gets in their way, and particularly officers who are upright and honest, they really try their best to destroy them.
Well, look, you set it up with all the details. So there are a series of 8 tweets from a son who's an activist for a police officer who was wrongly jailed for 4 years. Those are the facts, right?
Right.
So now the bigger story here is the relationship that BJP has, the current administration has, with people wearing uniform,
right?
So every opportunity that this government gets to share a platform with military, right, they grab it with two hands, right? And they are shameless about it.
Yeah, and it's the military, and it's people in the military who are amenable to their worldview.
Oh, but, you know, you can't blame the military because it's basically a Sarkari knocker, right?
Correct.
The fact that he's got camo and a machine gun doesn't make it any different because, you know, he's beholden to ministerial whims and fancies.
Right.
Now, when you take that analogy onto the level of the policeman, he's even more vulnerable because he's a state subject. Apart from the Indian Police Service, the local... So I think at least in the military, there is, you can delink yourself from the political patronage system.
There is some autonomy there. You're right.
There's some autonomy there. Yeah, there's a little bit of an arm's length. Unlike in Pakistan, where there isn't. So Pakistan is, the military is like the police, right?
Correct.
So now, looking at the police officer who was incorrect, who was kind of harassed on the wrong grounds. My first question is, why did it take, a couple of things, like, you know, why do you have to arrest a man when he's not at risk of running away from justice?
Yeah.
So the principle of harassment here is he's a police officer who has done an honest assignment for 30 years. On the day before he's supposed to retire, you put him in prison. Whatever the charges are, were they not bailable charges? I mean, those are the kind of things. And maybe we don't know the fullness of the story. Maybe there's a vendetta going on at a different level. And now he's been... So my main point is we won't get anything by going over what has happened in the last four years and what hasn't happened, right? We know the media will only step in when there is some photo opportunity to be had or an exclusive breaking news story to be given, right?
Yeah.
The wider point for me, Rohit, in this is how is, in my view, in this current environment that India is in, it takes a huge amount of courage to be in the police and to do your job in an upright moral fashion.
Yeah.
And in the military, right? I think policemen across the land, right, go home every day with some kind of Gujju terror hanging in the background, right? And that is something. So if I'm doffing my hat to this gentleman, he's said innocent, is that may he inspire legions of other people like him who are able to do this. Because being an honest policeman, or an independent and impartial policeman in India is nigh on impossible. It is very, very difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, they've done the same thing with Sanjeev Bhatt, who's been in jail, and he's, you know, a number of people have, you know, drawn attention to it. And Sanjeev Bhatt is the person who, he's been harassed for years. They filed some shady cases against him and his wife. He was also... So he was the person who says he was at the meeting when Modi essentially gave the orders to let Hindu mobs run riot and essentially kill, burn, lynch Muslims in retaliation for what happened at, you know, Godhra, which is 58 Karsevaks being burnt alive, allegedly by Muslims. But again, we don't know whether it was Muslims or not. That's kind of the story. I thought that was, you know, an open and shut thing, at least that the, not that it justifies any of the revenge, of course, but even that is a little shady, right? Nobody knows exactly what happened. There are other people in the BJP who say that that fire was started by the BJP itself. It's a conspiracy theory. But this man, Sanjeev Bhatt, has been, you know, trying to draw attention to this. And I think, you know, at some point of time, the tide was such that that's why Shah was in jail. But when you look at the way Shah has got out, and after Modi and Shah have consolidated power, anyone who could be a threat to them or anyone who was trying to hold them accountable, they've like harassed them in just the most vile ways. And, you know, they've used the machinery, entire machinery of the state to do it. And now that Amit Shah is the home minister, it's only going to get worse. So Teesta Sitalwar on the activist side, couple of journalists, but this other police officer. But you're right. I mean, you know, the police in India get a bad rap, and often they get a bad rap for justified reasons. But I know that for a number of things, this someone made this remark. I think it was a police officer himself who had told this to a lawyer. And then the lawyer basically shared it with me. He said that the police officer said that, look, some of these decisions that we have to take, whether it's about, you know, arresting a particular person, etc., we need direction from the courts or from a political authority. If the courts are going to tell us that it's okay to do this, right, that there is someone, no matter how powerful they are, and we know that, you know, if we do our jobs well, the courts will protect us, we will go ahead and do it. And he said there's just so much interference both and so much compromise, not just within the police, but also in the judicial system, that yeah. It really kind of undermines our you know, hand. And you're right. I mean, when you look at, you know, it tells you what extraordinary courage, you know, those people have who stand up to the system, like this gentleman.
Yeah, you know, even if not standing up to the system, if you are doing a job that is being compliant with your initial job spec, right, that you will protect the citizen, and go after the bad guys. Let's look at the crudest definition, protect citizens and go after the bad guys, right?
Yeah.
And if you take that and then you start throwing in stakeholders, political patronage of criminals, fixed court rules, it puts the police in a very difficult situation. And given, I think some of the things that happen in India, in the judicial system, is also, to your point that you were saying that your friend said that, you know, they can do it provided they have judicial assurance that it would be seen through, is also a huge thing. So, I mean, look, these things, we've made a lot of fun stories about policemen, like, you know, blaming rats for drinking illicit liquor, you know, seizing scooters but selling autos. So, you know, we've done lots of rubbish stories about policemen. But I think this one, I think we should... you know, respect to this gentleman. And I know the tweets suggest that, you know, it's too little too late. And we are part of that bandwagon of too little too late.
Right.
But we are not a professional news organization. We're just two blokes running a podcast, right? Hmm. So there's only so much that we can do. And it is our little shout out, respect to this gentleman and to his son and to all the policemen who, irrespective of what their political beliefs are, there's no problem if a policeman is voting BJP or a policeman is voting Samajwadi or Trinamool or whatever. But their day job,
correct,
right? They need to be able to parcel that, saying that while I support politically the BJP project, my day job means that I'm not going to pile on to a Muslim guy just because he's Muslim. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So those kind of things, it takes a lot of guts to do it in this day and age in India. So respect to this gentleman for doing that, and may he inspire, as I said.
Yeah. And I think I'll leave it at that, because I would just suggest that, you know, Saket Gokhale, and I can give you his exact user handle if you just give me a second. It's Saket Gokhale. It's at SaketGokhale. And his father is Mr. Suhas Gokhale. And he was one of five policemen. And just July 25th, all the charges that were leveled against the five policemen have been dropped. But, you know, he said something, which is, he said, you know, these Sanjeev Bhatt, Hemant Karkare, Inspector Subodh Kumar, who was someone shot by Gaurakshas in Bulan Shahar, his worry is that, he said, these are just names that will be forgotten. And, you know, I mean, there's something that, you know, resonated with me in you know, a certain kind of way, because he says that silly man says that in another lifetime, he would still choose to be an officer and serve the country again. He says he wouldn't do anything differently. That's his love for his country. And this man was tortured by those who asked for votes in the name of the uniform. And, you know, I just want to mention something very briefly here, very personal, because sometimes I would, you know, ask my dad that, because my father in some ways has, you know, been the model of this, again, you know, like, always paid his taxes on time. He still has, I think, I don't know whether we have photocopies of his tax returns from 1965 or something. It's quite possible. But, you know, everything above board, always. And my father's job at various points of time has essentially been that, you know, he would be the person who would actually have to sign the certificate or the papers saying that a ship was fit to leave the port and sail if he was inspecting it, or that a particular industrial system was fit for use because it had met a certain level of quality. Now, in India, where everyone takes shortcuts, you can imagine the kind of, you know, pressures he was under often. that there would be people who would suggest bribes, there would be people who would threaten him. He stood firm, and, you know, the bribes or, you know, if someone would get aggressive, that would usually end with my father roaring back. But it's something that he could have really made a fortune if he wanted to. You know, and I would, growing up, I would see people, you know, I know of people who've sold seats in colleges for, like, you know, parent is a principal. They've sold seats in colleges for like crores of rupees and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm also socialized into believing, obviously, that's wrong. I can't do it. But I remember having a conversation with this friend of mine, Amit Verma, brilliant, brilliant person, very nice chap. And I just had wonderful conversation with him. And I was talking to him about this, and I was saying that, you know, you see, his father's from the IFS, and again, IAS, I think. And again, you know, very honest person. So I was just saying that, you know, you have to wonder what is the incentive to keep going on like this when everyone around you is living large. Because what I think happens is that, you know, let's assume that one generation is corrupt. What I find is that, you know, yeah, you'll have a bad name, but two generations down, your grandchildren will go to Harvard. It'll all be forgotten. Because if you look at most of the blue blood fortunes in America or whenever, like two generations, three, four generations ago, they were all scum of the earth, robber barons. So I said that, you know, if you think of it from that perspective, I mean, what is the incentive for not going that route? And he said something very interesting. He said, yeah, but, you know, if you do that, what is left of you then, right? Who are you anymore? And I think that's something that kind of, you know, stayed with me. Because my father would also, coming back to this remark that Saket made, he would say this, that, you know, I would sometimes tell him that, you know, this sense of having done this for the nation, I mean, don't you feel that it was, you know, when you look at the state of the nation or Modi or whoever, even in earlier times, you know, the corruption, the failures of development, do you feel that don't you think it was like not worth it sometimes? And his point is that I didn't do it for any returns, right? I did it because in my view, it was the right thing to do. And of course, there were some other things also. He was very grateful that, you know, in that Nehruvian vision of India, here he was, you know, a kid who had never seen the sea, and he got a chance to go and join the, you know, Directorate of Marine Engineering Technology to become a marine engineer. He, you know, was a science student in college, and he got the opportunity to become a marine engineer. It was because of that, you know, vision of the independent Indian state. So somehow he felt he owed the country something. And there are lots of people in that generation who are nationalistic in that kind of way. So, you know, this might be a topic for another conversation, that kind
for
of...
For sure, for sure. Yeah,
nationalism. So this just, you know, it really moved me. It's been playing on my mind. And I think you put it very well that he's an inspiring figure. And you know, for whatever it is worth, I mean, you know, nothing's going to bring back those 4 years. And we can't even begin to imagine what the gentleman, Mr. Gokhale, must be going through or his family must be going through. But for whatever little it's worth, I think his story has touched thousands of people. And there are hundreds of thousands of people, if not more, who would respect and admire and revere a man like Mr. Suhas Gokhale.
Absolutely. And on that note, Rohit, let's kind of call this. Yeah. Okay. Right. Chalo, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.